It is difficult to imagine boxing considered a niche sport today as a national pastime, but for several years in the 1970s, it was that and more, when America was weighed down by the social, political, and military embarrassments of Vietnam and Watergate and concerned with the looming economic downturn, boxing became an obsession. Richard Hoffer's new book, Bouts of Mania, Ali, Frazier, Foreman, and an America on the Ropes, details the rise and glory of three of boxing's greatest competitors during the sport's last and best golden age. It's a great pleasure to welcome Richard Hoffer to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
Richard Hoffer was a senior writer at Sports Illustrated for 20 years and is the author of three previous books, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him again to the program. What brought you to boxing, certainly, but these three men in particular?
Well, I think when you think of boxing, you have to think of these three guys, and I was kind of trying to connect it to something bigger. I mean, we're always trying to make those kind of connections, and it occurred to me these three guys, I mean, they were not just creating Super Bowls and World Cups and World Series in these fights. I mean, these were kind of cultural touchstones as well. I mean, these were nearly historical events. I mean, they were that big and that meaningful and that significant. So when you noodle around and looking at some of these, you know, big fights and important personalities, I think you kind of get locked into this 5 years and these three guys.
The 5 years you're talking about are in the early 1970s, say 71 to 76, and as you talk about in the book, they faced each other in every possible combination you could think of.
And on nearly every continent as well. I mean, these guys just were exploding across the globe, and that was what was interesting to me. Any one of these guys could have been significant and important in his own right, but you had three of them at one time crowding into the same canvas, going after the same prize, and, you know, then we had this combustion, essentially. I mean, we've never had anything like it. One of them would have been a plenty, but three? Good Lord.
They each were a world heavyweight champion, an Olympic gold medalist, and a character in their own right, right?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, like I say, these guys could have carried the day on their own anytime, certainly now and even then when boxing was as big as it was. I mean, Ali had been coming off his exile. He was one of the most important personalities in sports, if not politics by then. And then you had Joe Frazier, this indestructible guy who had supplanted him. And then you had this kind of wannabe thug who was rising through the ranks at the same time, George Foreman. Like I say, any one of them, you know, that's enough. But then they're going after the same thing. And so you had this kind of a round delay, this little tournament, and it produced some of the greatest fights we've ever seen.
Talk a little bit about the timing. Bring us to 1970 and the perfect storm that created these three men and the fact that they became such a sensation.
Well, it's partly a result of the times. I mean, we had the country being polarized. It had already been polarized by race in the 60s, and that overhang was continuing. And now we had the war, which was further dividing the country. We had, you know, the youth movement now, which had a voice and had a cause. And now we had Ali, who was kind of articulating a lot of this, perhaps inadvertently, but nevertheless. And so he comes back from his exile. Remember, he's been gone for 3.5 years for refusing to serve in the army. And so here he is. He's carrying all this political freight as well. And now we've got fights that, you know, they're kind of ballot boxes in a way, because you could pick your cause. You could pick your side just as easily as you could pick your fighter. So these fighters kind of were significant in ways that they might not have intended to be, but nevertheless, they crossed over from sports into something bigger than that.
Why these three men, do you think?
You know, it was just the luck of the draw, I guess, that we would have so many at one time and so different. I mean, we had Ali, this, you know, tremendous personality who kind of brought out the best and the worst in everyone else, and certainly, you know, he's what made these fights work. I mean, we had him, his presence here, this garrulous presence, this polarizing presence, and in kind of providing the platform for these other two fighters who were sensational in their own right. And, you know, Ali kind of made it work. I mean, he was the key to all this, but still, these other two were more than just accomplices or foils.
You write a little bit about their relationship with one another. How much do you think they realized what they were doing for the sport and for the country?
I think they had an idea that these fights were bigger than, you know, than normal. I mean, certainly Ali did, because he had been around the block a little. Foreman was young and inexperienced, and I don't think he understood what was being created on his behalf, but certainly Ali could sense the enormousness of these events and how spectacular they were. And, well, he helped make them that way and pump them up. I mean, besides being a great fighter and personality, he was the biggest promoter that ever lived, I think. And so he was key to that as well. So he understood if the others didn't. And I think it kind of dawned on them as this thing crested.
When you think of the matches themselves, of the bouts, what was it that made them so great? It's hard to pick out one fight that would be the greatest, because they all have their moments.
Well, certainly. I mean, the first fight, the so-called fight of the century, with Ali coming out of his exile, and you had two undefeated heavyweights champions, you know, Ali versus Frazier in Madison Square Garden in 71. The anticipation for that was, it's just hard to imagine from this point in time. But this was, you know, this was on the cover of Life magazine, which was this country's house organ, essentially. This was a mainstream event that crossed over from sports to everything else. The other fights, although they weren't as keenly anticipated, produced such elements of surprise that, you know, that's... all you have to say to a certain demographic is "down goes Frazier," and you know exactly what that means. The, you know, Foreman upsetting this indestructible Frazier, or the rumble in the jungle, or the thrill in Manila. These are words that, you know, have freight after all this time, just for their element of surprise and spontaneity. And before there was reality programming, there was heavyweight boxing, and these kind of fights produced storylines and results that nobody could have anticipated.
In speaking of the relationship between the three men, you write in the book that certainly Ali and Frazier took it to a height of, it was hard for them to reconcile. And at one point, Frazier took credit, if you will, for Muhammad Ali's Parkinson's disease. This did not seem to be a respectful, if you will, a respectful relationship.
No, and it's a shame, because it started out as respectful. I mean, if you can picture these two guys plotting their futures, this was before they fought, but plotting their futures above, you know, in an office above Frazier's gym, like two teenage kids, you know, this is what we're going to do when we're grown up. I mean, they were friends, and they were peers, but Ali just, you know, stuck that knife in Frazier and kept twisting it for three fights. I mean, maybe friendship couldn't survive those kind of fights anyway, but Ali has there's a little bit of a mean streak in him, a cruelty, and Frazier was the brunt of it, and Frazier was ruined thereafter, not so much by the results of the fights, but just by the bitterness that ensued, and he never could get over that. Foreman, on the other hand, was like this puppy knocking against their two ankles, trying to get them together, and, you know, it's just, it would have been, you know, a nice Lifetime movie if that could have happened, but this is boxing, and these were, you know, live-and-die events, so that friendship can't survive that.
And you point out that George Foreman really comes out of this story as the real success because of his life outside of the ring.
Well, when you look at it, I mean, it kind of surprised me. I thought at first I was doing an Ali book, and then I realized, no, Frazier kind of had something with the public here that recognized his stoicism and his, you know, hardworking effort, and he symbolized something. And then at the end of the book, I thought, my gosh, did I just write a George Foreman book? Because this is the only guy who really survives it. Of course, Ali's the most famous man in the world. But Foreman here is, you know, wealthy. You know, he's fat and happy. He's content. You know, he came back. He did get a championship in later age. He had enormous wealth through the, you know, the Foreman grill. Who doesn't have one of those? And the other two guys kind of ruined each other, Frazier and Ali. And here's Foreman, the most unlikeliest. If he's not the hero, he's certainly an unlikely survivor.
There seems to be a new chapter being written on Ali, and I'm wondering how aware you were of it in writing your book, that a lot of what he was doing was promotion, was simply playing the game, and was keenly aware of what needed to be done to make it interesting. Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you're suggesting, has Ali gotten a little too much credit over the years? Yes, he has. He was kind of doing what had to be done. I mean, we think of him as this conscientious objector, for one thing, just to go back in history. He refused to go into the service because of his religion, not because of any long-held beliefs. I mean, he wasn't like that. I mean, this wasn't Martin Luther King, but, you know, as history kind of realizes what was done to him, and, you know, like I say, history bends toward justice, however slowly, and I think Ali was sort of resurrected by that, and the disease that he's had has kind of created another new way to look at him too. But yeah, I mean, he was a promoter first and foremost, and he would do whatever was on his agenda, not necessarily the country's.
And when it came to how that affected the other individuals, should they have taken it as seriously as they did because it was promotion?
Well, yes, they should have, except Ali did go too far in the case of Frazier. I mean, he was insulting beyond the needs of any promotion, calling him ugly, smelling, and a gorilla. And as far as Foreman, I mean, Foreman knew exactly what Ali was doing. I have a scene in the book where Ali and Foreman, before their fight, are conversing in this kind of a hotel room, and Ali's giving them advice, and they're, you know, as good friends as could be, a mentor and his, you know, student, and then they come out on the balcony, and then he flips a promotional switch and starts insulting Foreman in front of the public, and Foreman just laughed. I mean, he knew what was going on. It didn't bother him, but Frazier, that was a different story.
The book is fascinating. It is called Bouts of Mania, Ali Frazier, Foreman, and an America on the Ropes. The book is published by DeCapo. Richard Hoffer, thank you very much for spending time with us this morning. I appreciate it.
I was glad to be here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is Bouts of Mania, Ali Frazier, Foreman, and an America on the Ropes. The book is published by DeCapo. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.